Hello and welcome to the Courageous Leaders Club. Are you ready to take your leadership to the next level and activate your full potential so you can lead with courage, certainty and conviction? Then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Joanna Howes, and in this podcast, we feature creative industry leaders who share their stories, learnings and incredible insights on what helped them to achieve success. So let's get started with today's story of courageous leadership. Hello, we are live for the Courageous Leaders Club, and I am so excited that we've got AJ Coyne with us today. Hello, AJ. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone. Hi, Joe.
It's brilliant to have you here. And just to by, let's introduce you first. AJ and I have actually been very fortunate. We've worked together in two agencies. Well, McCann in the UK, and then we both disappeared to Australia and did BBDO Clemenger. So I've been lucky enough to work with you and have the opportunity to see you in action. But AJ is now the head of marketing at Klarna. So we can talk a bit about how you've gone from agency side to client side. You were also one of Campaign's Power 100. Congratulations on that. That's a huge achievement. You led an amazing project called The Lion's Share, which I'd love to get into the interview for you to talk about, because that's an incredible project that I really want the audience to hear about. And that you've had senior roles across BBDO, McCann and Ogilvy, and as we said, the general manager role at BBDO Australia, and now head of marketing at Klarna. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's my first live, so I'm super pumped.
Your first live? You just get used to it. You forget that anyone might be watching. It's just like me and you. That's fine.
Okay,
Before we dig into you, we've got so many things to talk about with you. There's so much you've done in your career and what you're working on right now. Before we do, you know, this is the Courageous Leaders Club. The purpose of this show is to really inspire leaders to step into their courageous zone. You know, the world's changing, future's changing in business, and we need this courageous leadership to make sure we're future fit and ready to look after our people. For you, what does courageous mean for you?
Without a doubt, it comes down to trusting your gut instinct and trying where possible to avoid that little voice that you get in your head, or equally voices from outside influence. But without doubt, it's always about that gut instinct, because 9 times out of 10, your gut is always right.
Yeah. And I'm curious, actually, have you ever had a time where you didn't listen to your gut and then something happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think back in Australia, certainly there were times where there was a lot of influence within that role and that agency across different, very fairly senior people. And I think it was very hard to hear your gut at times. And you actually had to fight for it, or even walk away from the office to be able to actually get clarity of thought. It's much easier now working from home with no one in your ear in lockdown to avoid that. But certainly, I think we live in a world where everyone has elements of anxiety anyway, but like where possible, like your gut is so important to listen to.
And how much did that come into play when you decided that you were going to quit, you know, a very successful job you had in London? Nobody wanted you to go. They all wanted you to stay. And you were like, no, I'm going to the other side of the world, but I don't really know anybody. I don't really know what I'm walking into. Yeah. Where did instinct come into that?
I mean, I think so my wife, Charlie, who you know really well, and I were just got engaged, and we're at this moment in life where if we don't do something now, we'll be sort of doing the same thing for sort of ever. And that's not a bad thing for people to make that decision. And we'd had, from a career perspective, had such a good run at McCann at that time with Xbox and all the great work we'd achieved in Pandora and winning that piece of business. But it was just like, what's next? And I could sort of just see the same thing, like not in a bad way, but happening again, in terms of, you know, new business or whatever that might be. And so we were like, well, let's have a life adventure. We had the offer, thanks to your kind introduction to BBDO. And it was just a moment where we got a bit drunk and we said, okay, let's just make the decision and then send the email back. And we got a bit tipsy and said yes. And then the next thing, we're moving to Australia. And the reason being is like life adventure first and foremost. And I think certainly the career opportunity there was massive, but definitely the number one tick was a personal goal in terms of experiencing a different country and what that would bring to our lives.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, that would be a very courageous decision to suddenly go the other side of the world. Yeah. For you making that courageous choice, what did it do for you in terms of your growth and your leadership and now what it's opened up for your possibilities?
I mean, so I guess there's two things I would say on the decision. The first thing is we didn't think about it a lot, which is super strange given how far away Melbourne is from London in terms of that. And then actually we had a moment when we arrived and we're like, okay, we live in Melbourne now. This is weird. But in terms of, I guess, the opportunity there. So, I mean, I had a fairly senior role at McCann before I left, and the role to go to BBDO was a senior step up and a big account to run. I think the market in Australia for advertising has a lot greater opportunity. Certainly it's smaller and the opportunity to do greater things is there. There's sort of an attitude in Australia that's like, we can do anything. We can sort of bash on any door and get it done. And that's certainly the story of Lionshare and how that came into fruition. But I think, you know, this takes courage to react to that, because if you're operating in a world where you get told what to do or you're living within a structure, there's an element in Australia where actually you need to be a bit more fearless and cutthroat to step ahead.
Yeah.
But it does yield good rewards or results.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It was more, a bit more fearless, a bit more maverick. Like, and in a sense,
maverick is a good word.
Yeah. And you can make it possible. You know, yes. And also a sense of wanting to be the first. I found there's quite a competitive, let's make this happen and let's be the first to do it. Would you agree?
Completely. 100%. It's definitely, competitive is 100%, more so than I've ever experienced in any sort of cultural organization I've ever worked in, or like both from a country perspective, but also the business we've both worked at. But there is a ruthlessness and a pride in the industry, that, you know, in creativity and in doing something that's not been done before and doing it first. Yes. And I think that sort of supercharges this race to get there, which is, I think, I mean, certainly motivated me while I was there.
Yeah, a huge motivator. And we've actually got the wonderful Linda watching. She's just put up a comment here. Let's have a look. You, us Aussies, sure do think we can do anything. Loads of courage here. I love that, Linda. Thank you for being with us.
1,000,000%. And I feel like I might start doing a bit of an Aussie twang, Linda, during the live. So apologies in advance, but I've still got Melbourne in the blood a year back in the UK.
Oh, I completely confuse everyone because I'm Essex with Australian mix. And they're just like, where are you from?
Amazing.
So talking about that kind of maverick first. A bit the lion's share then, because that was incredible what you created.
Yeah, I mean, so the lion's share started with a friend of mine called Chris Nelius, who's a film director and an advertising film director based in Sydney. And he was sat at home one night drinking a few beers, watching the cricket and getting a bit frustrated at a telephone comms brand in Oz who were using all sorts of wildlife from cheetahs to giraffes to sell phone data. And it got him thinking, well, like, we make ads all the time and humans get paid a lot to be in ads. It's basic usage. And actually, the more the ad gets played out or more markets it enters, the more money the human makes. Whereas here I am looking at, you know, the most endangered species in the world. In fact, we as humans have wiped out 50% of the animal race in the last 50 years alone. Yet they're in 20% of every advert we see, but they're not getting anything in return. So wouldn't it be a good world if we lived, wouldn't it be good if we lived in a world where businesses and brands that were profiting from the image of an animal, whether it be CGI, cartoon, logo, reel, that they could actually contribute to their survival? And so the lion share came up in his head, and then he worked at a company called Finch, and the CEO of Finch is a good friend called Rob Galluzzo, who loved the idea and sort of helped get it into a, I guess, a pack or a sellable pack. And then he spoke to our good friend and my old boss, Nick Garrett. And then that sort of started the stepping stone of let's work out how we do this. Mm-hmm. We spoke to Mars initially, the CEO, the global CMO at the time, Andrew Clark, who said, okay, I love it. I want to sign it off, but you don't have a clue how to run a fund. You know, you need to get the UN. And we literally got the UN. The next thing we did was, I think Rob went to a meeting in New York at the UN, first and foremost. They signed a letter of intent saying that they were into it. We went back to Mars. Mars was super interested, but then again, a bit cautious. And then I was in London, I think for a wedding in May, and Nick called me and said, hey, I need you to go to New York next week and run a week's worth of workshops with the UN because we need to get this deal done. And so the next thing I want to pack your bag in New York, sat in the UN, which is mind-blowing to be like, what are you doing here as a, I think a 31-year-old at the time, being like, I'm in the UN and these people are sort of listening to me. And we basically carved out what the lion's share was going to become. We carved out with Nielsen what the percentage was going to be required from brands to pay into the fund, what the different types of conservation efforts we were going to go after, how we were going to recruit brands. Basically, this week of amazing work that led to Mars ultimately signing the week after as the first signature. And since then, it's gone from strength to strength. So I like just to name a few brands, Gucci, Cartier, Nielsen, The Economist have all signed up, as well as a lot of other smaller brands too. And there's, I think, a few more being announced on Earth Day, but they've raised over $50 million USD. And it was, you know, like in terms of like career goal and learnings, you know, to be at the UN running a workshop to then deliver a fund that's now in the world is, yeah, it's a bit weird.
That is incredible. First of all, huge congratulations. And on the side of that, because that is you stepping massively outside your comfort zone, you know, traveling around on your own in New York, in a place that you've never been, trying to set something up that you've got no experience in setting up.
Yeah.
What's in you to be able to do that? What learnings can you share that if somebody watching this, and we've got Rod Handley is watching, just saying incredible how new ideas come into being, you know, humans being. What is it in you as a human being that you can inspire others of? How did you do that?
Yeah. So I have this, I guess, mantra and attitude that no one knows what they're doing half the time. And I genuinely do believe it. And I don't think if you wait for permission from anyone, whether it be your leader, your stakeholder, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to look for reasons to say no. And so I guess what I have in my belly is this like mantra that no one knows what they're doing. I'm going to give it a crack at trying to define what I believe in. And in doing so, be, I guess, considered and respectful in the approach. So it's not like, I guess, without respect. But if you believe in something and appreciate that not really anyone else has got, you know, if it hasn't been done before, has a clue what they're doing either, then you can start to sort of collaborate and get to a good outcome. And I think I was driven by this passion for the planet and this passion to do good with the lion's share and this idea that, you know, it's just a wrong that needed to be like right. And I sort of removed any fear or anxiety and just went, okay, these guys at the UN are amazing. And they're all, you know, the backstories are phenomenal. They don't understand private sector. I do. They don't understand advertising. I do. Okay, I can contribute here in a way. I can't talk about some of the topics that they're going to be so much more further experts at, but I can certainly provide a lens here to get this into a fund that can be at least viable by a CEO or a CMO in a few years' time. So, but yeah, no one knows what they're doing, and use that to sort of put the fire in your belly.
So I'm kind of hearing as well from you, because with all the coaching I do, is belief is so important. And having that belief in yourself to back yourself. And then what I also heard was Simon Sinek does a lot of his work is knowing your why. Your why and the mission was bigger than you. Mm-hmm. So you kind of had to get out of your own way if you were going to bring this to life. So your fears became almost irrelevant because your mission was bigger than you.
So yes.
You could move. Does that make sense?
100% agree with that. I think if you're energized by something that is far bigger than any question you might have about your capability, then you're going to be spurred on to the next task. And it's a really good piece of advice for everyone.
And then what I love about you, AJ, I've known you for years now, and you are an inspiration. And what I would love you to share is this kind of, sorry, I'm going to embarrass you now. There's this confidence in you. You show up with such confidence, such, and then this, you know, this back in yourself, such drive, such ambition, and such focus for where you're going. Where does this come from? Were you born with this, or is this kind of something you've learned as you've grown up in your experience?
It's a hard question to answer, where with either out sounding a bit ridiculous or not. I put it down to partly my mother, who I was single. I guess my parents are divorced. I left my father, so it's not about that. But she raised me, and she's a fairly impressive human being and successful businesswoman. And I guess, have been inspired by what she's achieved in her life. And even though, I guess, she started from nothing and has achieved a lot, I obviously had a lot that she didn't have because she provided that for me growing up. But I was sort of spurred on by her achievements to want to do the same and to, I guess, make her proud. But also, I guess, as a result of being the two of us, I'm an only child from my mum's, I guess, side. I've got a half-brother. But I was hanging around adults from a very early age, which seems super strange. But I do, like, remember from like 4 years old, like in conversation with 30, 40 year olds, like, and then throughout going to business events with my mum as her plus one. And I don't know if that, I guess, had an impact on maturity or growing up a bit quicker, but I feel like maybe it did, but that might also be me just overanalyzing.
I think that does make a lot of sense, because I also, when I've seen you in action, there's no fear over if someone's more senior than you or knows more than you. You don't change. You're just you, and you show up as you. There's no, oh, I need to be this, or I need to fit in, or I need to change how I am. Yeah. Do you think maybe that has come from just because, again, you just got comfortable being in that sort of surrounding from a young age?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm someone that will speak to anyone, I guess, whether you're starting out in your career or you're a senior stakeholder, in the same way and the same approachable manner, because I think everyone is human at the end of the day. And I'm a bit hard on my sleeve in terms of being very transparent, and I guess maybe to the detriment, because I'm very honest and I'm very in a respectful way, but I'm not going to hide things behind, like avoid topics and lean into them. And I think that probably is why I'm fairly open in all conversations I have, whether it is with a scary senior person or, you know, a colleague or a friend.
And I've always respected that, because I could see, you know, for a lot of people watching that are in the advertising world, you know, sometimes the creatives, it's their idea and stuff, and they can get a bit protective of their idea. Yeah. And you would just be like, no, I'm off, going to talk to them. There's no avoidance. There was no, I'm in a better mood. You're like, you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is my whole thing. Like, I love the creative industry and my pedigree in advertising. I'm a firm believer that creative ideas can come from anywhere. And I really reject the silos operate in agency land. And I do think there's skill sets between each department that are very different. And that's true. But a good idea like the Lion's Share can come from anywhere. And as a result of that, as long as you can talk creativity in that environment, then I think you can stand quite well in those difficult conversations. But there are a few egos that you need to lean into and call a bit of BS to, or I guess massage it to a certain extent with conversation.
Thank you. And just to build on the great advice you're giving, because a lot of people I work with, one of the things they will do is they naturally avoid difficult conversations. They will naturally avoid conflict.
Yeah.
What is the strategy or the voice in your head? What is it telling you that helps you move? You use the word, you lean in. What allows you to lean into that?
I mean, I know it exists, but I reject conflict always. And I think I might enter it like a heated topic and have to, I guess, be very considered on what I'm going to say there. But I would always reject conflict and call out any behavior that would sort of suggest someone's saying something for the sake of it or behaving in a way that's a bit diva-esque. And so I would encourage everyone to remember that we live in a world where, you know, we don't put up with that anymore. Like, we don't, like, no one will part with it. Like, and so I'm a human too. Like, why are you talking to me like that? And, you know, and saying that is an okay topic, and you'll be listened to. And I think that's something that I've probably approached. We're all in this together is probably a good way of saying that than, like, I'm only trying to help. There's different ways of doing that. But I would be a bit more brash and be like, what are you on about? Like, we don't talk to each other like that. We're on the same team.
You bring it back to the human. We're humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always.
There's no need for this sort of animosity. No. Like that was in team. And that's what a bit more about you. And then I want to move a good last question here. Then I want to move into, you know, I know you've changed into client side now, but the last question I've really respected from you is your knack in relationship building. I'm a natural introvert and it's taken a lot for me to do the connections and stuff. You have this ability that whoever you're talking to, you make them feel like the most special person in the world. You really connect, you're really present. How has that helped you in your career, your work, and your relationships? And were you just born with that? Or is it something you're very conscious that you do?
It's not a conscious thing. I think it's a conscious thing in only in an alien environment, which I guess a client agency relationship can be, and you need to find common ground. And so I remember having, I guess, my most senior role at Ogilvy, and my senior client was an amazing lady, and she was at Philips, and she was much older than me, very seasoned marketeer and super like intimidating in terms of her approach. But our common ground was she was a single mom with a son. And so I quickly worked out ways in which we could talk on a, like, get to like a human connection level. Then we could talk about the work and it wouldn't always be, but that would be a bit more engineered for the sake of, you know, I guess the outcome of a better working relationship, which benefits both of us. Yeah. But I mean, it's annoying, but I do think, I mean, I'm half Irish, half Bahraini. I've kissed the Balani stone 4 times. So I think I've maybe got the gift of the gab as well. But yeah, it's a hard one to pin down.
I can see the difference it makes, but I love that already, just that strategy of find that human connection, that human common ground. It's like that's the seed of the tree that then you can just keep building on and keep growing. Rather than I see a lot of people will look at someone, if actually I think a lot of people, they don't look at the person, they see the job title.
Yes.
Know it, you're trying to be something you're not, or you're trying to be a role or something. It's actually just see the person and how you can connect with them, because what I'm loving as a whole theme of this interview is be human.
100%.
I think it's really strong, and we're all
completely. I would actually say that some of the success I've had is all down to just that.
Yeah, and leveraging how brilliant human beings are rather than trying to be something maybe we're not. Just to change gears a little bit now, you know, you have got an amazing experience in agencies. You've done incredibly well and had incredible award-winning success at Cannes. And now you're head of marketing at Klarna.
Yeah.
Quite a courageous move. What drove that decision and what are you learning from that?
It's honestly been one of the best decisions and career moves I've made. I couldn't speak more highly of the move, but also the company I work for, Klarna. It's been a phenomenal ride in the last 12 months. It was a really courageous step in terms of like it's fintech, it's finance regulation, it's all these like such interesting, heavy topics that I've never touched in my background. But I guess the opportunity at the time, and Klarna moves at the speed of light, faster than any agency I've ever worked at. But the brief at the time was they were looking to build a consumer brand. So Klarna, for those that have used us or know us, you know, you probably experienced this at a checkout, you know, on one of your favorite websites when you're buying a product to, you know, buy now, pay later, or to split the cost. But we want to build a standalone, I guess, the Nike in the fintech finance world brand. And then so the entry point for me was that made a lot of sense given my background and what I'd done. Now, in, I guess, 12 months in, I mean, I'm leading into new topics and learning every day about HM Treasury, regulation, government, and all these different things I hadn't ever experienced before that's so important in this world. And it's been amazing. So I would, I guess, encourage everyone to experience and not be too worried. I've spoken to quite a few people actually who are looking to make a similar move or like to get to a brand role or a marketing role. And there's a lot of anxiety with, am I good enough? Like, do they appreciate the background that you've, like the experience that we've had? And I guess Lionshare was a good stepping ground for me because it's business development and marketing. At the same time, I think it's important for anyone to remember that in the consultant side and advertising land, you know, you are a generalist across many categories, and you might experience working on tech one day, finance the next, FMCG, and that sort of experience is fundamentally sets you apart from a lot of, you know, more traditional marketeers that have spent 12 years working in one category. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But I guess don't shy away and be proud of that varied experience that you would have got in agency land, because it does set, I guess, your CV apart as well.
Do you think you'll stay client side or you're open?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very, very, very happy at Klarna for now. I mean, it's honestly, after 6 weeks, I forgot working anywhere else. And I feel like now I'm nearly a year in, it's like I can't even remember what it was like before. And I've only been to the office twice because I joined in like pandemic lockdown and things. So that's been insane in itself. But I think I'm very fairly settled for, I can't imagine going back anytime soon.
And do you have a team that you look after?
Yes. Yeah. So I've got UK marketing team at Klarna and phenomenal people as well. One of the key things for me in terms of the leadership topic is very much letting the team shine and giving them autonomy. So we work in a very problem space solution and way of working. And so we'll set problem spaces together and then the team will be empowered to go off and drive the solution and consult, I guess, back and inform even at times as well. But then it gives them the ability to have autonomy and also focus if you're talking about one or two problem statements. And then also they get to build their skills by running like projects and things versus, I guess, in an agency land, it's very linear in terms of like levels, that we try and be very flat in how we approach things at Klarna.
And I think that's great because I think team management and team leadership is changing faster than I've seen anything really change right now. And the big shift I'm seeing is moving away from this leading is controlling your team, which a lot of people would say that was years ago, but it's not. If you speak to a lot of leaders now, it's still very much leaders are hanging on to control, because they haven't learned what it means to let go of control and what the role of the leader really is. It's a safe space to hang on to control and do more of a telling and to stay in the weeds. With now working with a team where you've now moved into the empowerment, how have you seen that that's encouraged your team to step into their courageous zone and find their voice and find their ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the right word there is they feel empowered, and an empowerment approach is going to get the most out of any team member because they feel accountability. And I think that's so important. So like whilst, you know, we'll have the fundamentals in place, we'll set the strategy as a collective. I'll always include everyone in the team and as part of setting the agenda for the year ahead and the key initiatives or focus areas. And then I'll, you know, have weekly syncs on a one-on-one basis with everyone in the team and then have them come to me and go, hey, this is where I'm at with this. And actually there's no pressure to like, we'll have timelines, but I won't put additional layers of pressure on to go, okay, I want to see something here. I go, look, you have the goalposts and I trust you. So you now keep me informed and consulted and let me input along the way. But it's, I would hope, and I think they would say this too, they feel empowered. And I think that I would encourage any leader to think about that type of approach to get the best out of your team. And I think also the, I guess, not only just from a relationship perspective, but actually from an output perspective too.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, that transition, because I'm guessing you would have gone through that transition of being more like manager to empowering someone. Was that an easy transition for you to let go of control? Or did you notice that it was took a little bit of time to kind of go, yeah, I need to step back?
Yeah. So the first time I experienced it was actually in Australia, because I think prior to that, I had enough capacity to be able to do the job and be involved in everything. And then when I started, like, Mars is so many brands, so many different clients, and it was two offices. So I just didn't have the capacity to be able to be over everything. And so I basically have a mutual friend of ours, Rob Smith, is a good coach of mine. And I remember having a call with him being like, how do you do it? How do you be across everything without actually being in the detail? And what's the secret? And it was a few of the things from whom I adopted, which was very much, you know, it's prioritization. It's understanding the key things, either from a profitability level, an objective level, a team level, a client level at that role. And then, you know, being across those as much as possible, and then setting the foundations to let everyone else drive the pieces that you can't control, but at least be aware of. And I think it wasn't easy at that time. It's a lot easier going to Klarna now, having had that experience prior, to be able to do that. But it's, yeah, there's an element of you've got to have the confidence to let go. And it is a bit like you need to be able to trust the people around you and ensure that you've empowered them in the same light.
And be okay to embrace setbacks and embrace mistakes. Like,
yeah.
You're human. You're going to make a mistake.
Completely. So, everything should be iterative. Like, it doesn't matter. Like there's no, I hate this sort of like, again, this was a culture in the agency we both worked at in Oz, where blame was such a problem. And it was like, it was honestly horrendous. And it's like, that is something that I completely reject and like, yeah, learn, share, laugh about it, and yeah, we'll work it out together. But, and I think that's important in the empowerment thing, is I'm accountable too, even if I'm giving autonomy. I would never ever expect someone to be on the firing line. I'm accountable too. I trust, you know, that's, I think, something you need to be prepared for too.
Yeah, that's so well said. Thank you, AJ. And just before we wrap up, the talking about, you know, embracing mistakes, embracing setbacks, where has maybe some of your, you know, you went to step into your courageous zone, it didn't kind of go how you wanted to, but then, yeah, you know, did it stay a mistake, or were you able to turn it into, actually through this mistake, it became something really great?
Yeah. So I think the biggest, I guess, mistake that I've ever made is letting work take control and letting work enter my personal life in a way which is far too, like you mentioned earlier, me being really present in relationships. When work enters your home life, you can stop being present at home. And I think that in Oz, I was managing so many time zones with the UN and difficult stakeholders that I just forgot about living for a bit. And it's actually really like a sad like experience to have gone through, and certainly really bad for Charlie. And I think you do learn from that, because you know, it affects your people you love and the relationships. And so now I have a lot more, I guess, focus on when to stop and when to start. And don't get me wrong, there's times when you do need to work a bit later. But I'm always like, we're not saving lives. I have to remember that if I ever get a bit stressed. But I do try and turn on like Slack notifications at night now, so I can put the work away and enter. It's so hard in lockdown, and enter into like living at home and enjoying life here too. But that's definitely, I'm sure everyone's going through that at the moment, because it's like, when does work stop?
Yeah, that's a great share, because you're so right. The people I'm talking to right now is all blurring into one. And it's like, when do you stop? And I even know that there are some companies that are speaking to their teams to say, look, you don't need to work late. But the teams, they just are. Everyone just doesn't seem to be, the day just sort of goes, before you know it, you're still typing on your laptop and you haven't moved all day.
No.
So there are some lots of self-care things you can do. You know, I'm happy for anyone to reach out to me who wants any self-care advice for the moment of how to look after yourself. But that's a great thing. Thank you, AJ. Your leadership is inspirational, and I know everyone watching this is going to be taking so much gold from this. And from what you know, you're getting all embarrassed again, aren't you? I love it.
Yeah.
You've always been inspirational to me. I felt so happy when you came to Australia. I was like, yes, he's here.
Yeah.
And what advice, now you know all the things you know now, and all the learnings and all the setbacks, everything, what advice would you have loved to have given to your younger self?
I mean, my fate, like, literally, if only you knew then what you know now is such a great phrase. Honestly, like, the understanding that a lot of people haven't got a clue. And I really like, not to be, I guess, cheeky or to be a young entry creator, you should always be respectful. But don't wait for permission. You're not going to be told always the right thing to do. And if you see something and you see a problem or you see an opportunity, seize it. You're not like, ask for forgiveness. You're going to always, no one's going to tell you off for doing work and for thinking and for trying things. And I think there's an element where hopefully, I think the new generation entering the workforce are a bit more like that than certainly I was when I started. But definitely there was this element of hierarchy that felt like you had to sort of, wait or like be like get permission. So no one knows what they're doing. Don't wait, just do it. It's sort of the mantra that I would give my sort of 20-year-old self.
That's brilliant. I love it. Oh, we have actually just got a question from Linda here, just saying, can you share more about the problem space?
Yeah, so in terms of, I guess, how we approach things at Klarna, we identify different problem spaces that we then will rally around. So that might be based on some data on people that are using our product and go, actually, we've identified there's an issue here that we need to fix. It might be around a reputational thing. And so you write a problem space statement that is based on instinct, data, research, behavior. And then that's sort of the sole work, a task force or a team that will drive that problem space and the solutions around fixing it. And that becomes part of, I guess, key part of our marketing plans and how we approach day-to-day life.
That's great. I like that. And it's just such a simple terminology, right? We're in the problem space now. Now we're moving into solution space. I like that shift for people. Great question. Thank you. If anyone else has got any questions, type them up quickly. I'm just checking all of them here. We've got Louise is just saying, feeling empowered as a team member is so important. It motivates and drives you to be more creative and take more risks. And I think that's a lot about, the courageous zone. When you step into your courageous zone, the risks I don't think feel as scary. I think you can move forward and do that. And then it's another lovely thing from John here. Spot on. The magic is acknowledging we're all a bit ignorant. I love that. Adrian, is there anything else you'd love to share before we close in terms of wise words or any inspiring thoughts for you?
I think the only thing I would say is a really challenging time for everyone. Remember to live your life and not get too bogged down with the working, working, working. And in every relationship, mate, like, human first, always. Even if someone's disappointed you, human first.
That's lovely. And I think that needs to be your new AJ human first.
Love that.
AJ, I just want to say thank you for your time. You've been incredible. So much gold, so much learning. Always inspired after talking to you. And I wish you all the luck at Klarna. And oh, last thing, did you want to promote? You're actually on a panel tonight. Do you want to share what that is?
Oh, let's do a shameless plug. I feel like I'm a celebrity now. So I've got a new album out. At 5:15 this evening, we have something called Smooth Sessions, which is an event we host at Klarna every quarter. Tonight, I'm on the panel. It's being chaired by the editor-in-chief from Elle magazine called Farah. And alongside me, I'll have the head of marketing for Benefit, head of marketing and CEO for a startup fashion brand, and also a production company that's doing some really great stuff in the e-commerce space. And we're tackling the topic of sort of the future of selling and retail and the high street. And I think it would be, if you have an hour, come check it out. I'll put the link in the comments after.
Brilliant. Thank you. I think that would definitely be one to watch. AJ, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. And I look
Thank
forward
you.
to hang out and see each
Yeah,
other.
exactly. Yeah. Wine and a dog walk ASAP.
Definitely. All right. Thank you to all those who've watched live with us. And if you're watching it on re-record, there's so much to learn. Thank you so much. Take care. And I'll see you next week. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Courageous Leaders Club. Do take a moment to let me know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please share it with them. I'm sure they'll appreciate it. Lastly, you can connect with me on LinkedIn and learn more about what I do at www.thechangecreators.com. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll meet again on the next episode of the Courageous Leaders Club.